Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. At the movies this summer, dinosaurs are at it again, threatening life as we know it on planet Earth.
These creatures were here before us. And if we're not careful, they're gonna be here after.
And if that sequel's not rocking your boat, well, the mommy drama continues on a beautiful island off the coast of Greece.
Come on, girl!
Just one look and I can hear a bell ring.
I've never felt closer to my mom.
She wasn't scared because she had me.
Mamma mia, here I go again.
Mamma mia, here we go again. And Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom are just two of the highly anticipated movies this summer. But will they be worth the price of admission? Well, here to separate the must-see and the must-miss movies of the summer is Ty Burr, film critic for the Boston Globe. Hello, Ty. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony. And whoever I let in with Singing in the Rain, thank you for that on this day.
We appreciate it. True, it's a furnace out there. Well, let's start with some of those big blockbusters. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Worth seeing?
Well, I haven't seen Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. It's not out for another couple of weeks. And, you know, I'm expecting it to be as much an enjoyable slab of head cheese as the original. You know, you do not go to this necessarily for the art,
right.
Even though Meryl Streep is having a good old time in it. You go to turn off your brain. And you know what? Here's what I say about summer blockbusters. Some of them are great for turning your brain off. Some of them, not so much.
Right.
So Jurassic World... this is, I think the fifth movie now.
Are we up to number five?
We're up to number five. We're in the middle of the second trilogy, for what that's worth. And at this point, you might as well just go to the Universal Studios and ride the theme park ride, because that's all. There are characters. They're pretty thin. They're dinosaurs, and they're fun to watch. And that's pretty much about all this movie has going for it.
And sooner or later, you can be sure that a bad dinosaur is going to be chasing some good people.
Well, no, the twist is there's a good dinosaur.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
See, that always bothered me about the first Jurassic Park. It's like, come on, guys, these animals went extinct, and we're casting them as the problem here.
Personally, in a Jurassic Park movie, I just want to see more Jeff Goldblum, and unfortunately, he's around for about 3 nanoseconds in the beginning and the end. So I hope you got a hefty paycheck for that.
All right. So I want to ask you about a movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay. Here is a turn-off-your-brain summer blockbuster that does exactly what you want. I actually, in my review, which is out online now and in the paper tomorrow, called it the platonic ideal of the summer air conditioning movie. There is a plot. It doesn't make a lick of sense. That's fine. There's dialogue that all about, you know, you got to adjust the frimmer jabber on your sides regulator, and it doesn't matter at all. What matters is that you've got Paul Rudd, who is as charming as ever, and Michael Douglas, and a whole bunch of solid actors having a good time, things that get really large and things that get really tiny. So, you know, I as a fan, as somebody who was once a child totally into, like, The Incredible Shrinking Man, you know, or Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you want a movie where, like, the heroes get so small they're attacked by a pigeon.
All right.
You know?
Let's hear a moment from the trailer of Ant-Man and the Wasp that gives us some clue as to who the Wasp is in the movie. So you were going to hear Paul Rudd and Abby Ryder Forston, who plays Ant-Man's daughter in the film.
So, how long have you been Ant-Man again?
Not long. It just sort of happened.
I wish I could fight bad guys like you.
And I seem to mess it up almost every time.
Maybe you just need someone watching your back.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Yeah.
So, you wrote about this movie. It's fast, it's funny, it's superficial, it's full of likable stars and scientific mumbo-jumbo, and above all, it taps into the human urge to see big things become little and little things get big. I love that.
And Michelle Pfeiffer's in it, and again, you know, the main problem with the movie is not enough Michelle Pfeiffer.
Okay. All right. That's great.
But there is a giant Hello Kitty Pez dispenser, and for that reason alone, the movie's worth your, you know, whatever bucks you pay.
All right. So let's move on. There's a lot of there's some unique films that I want to talk about from the Sundance circuit that are making it to the big screen this summer. Let's talk about Three Identical Strangers, a documentary about three triplets separated at birth that has some crazy twists and turns. Tell us about this movie.
This is a movie I saw at Sundance that I couldn't wait to see again, and I'm glad it's getting released. It's a CNN production. It'll be on the channel in December, but it's a movie you should see in the theaters. Take a bunch of friends. You'll be able to talk about it for hours afterwards. It is about these three boys who are separated at birth, triplets, identical triplets, and separated by an adoption agency, and they didn't find each other until they were 19. And it became, around 1980, it became a big news story. They were on all the talk shows. And then things started getting weird and dark, and they found out things about why they might have been separated. And I don't want to give away the movie's surprises, but they keep coming. The more you find out about the story, the darker and weirder and more kind of appalling it becomes. It's a entertainingly made documentary about a subject that gets less and less entertaining and kind of more sad, but just fascinating at the same time.
Well,
it's a really remarkable movie.
Here's a moment from the trailer of Three Identical Strangers. You're going to hear the moment one of the men, Bobby Shaffrin, realizes that he has a double.
It started when I went to college. It was the first day of school. All these people are coming up to me saying, Eddie, how are you? Eddie, hi. I'm like, my name's not Eddie. I don't know what you're talking about.
As soon as this guy turned around, I knew it was Eddie's double. I said, you're not going to believe this. You have a twin brother.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You have a... Yeah, so, Ty, you wrote that this is a movie that will make you think twice about your own siblings and maybe take a long look in the mirror at yourself.
And I actually got to watch this a second time around with some family friends who are identical twin girls, and the hair was rising off the top of their head.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. All right, well, let's talk about the sci-fi comedy, Sorry to Bother You. Tell us about this.
It's not really a sci-fi comedy. It's more like a crazed midnight movie. Do you remember some of the weird midnight movies from the late 60s, early 70s, like Putney Swope?
No, Putney Swope.
Which was directed by Robert Downey Sr.,
Downey
Jr. Or, some of the early Brian De Palma movies. These crazy wacko comedies. This is up in their league. It's directed by a R&B rapper turned producer, writer, director named Boots Riley. It's about a... telemarketer, a African-American telemarketer played by Keith Stanfield, who is so wonderful on Donald Glover's Atlanta. He's the spacey best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here he gets a lead, and he's a telemarketer who discovers he has a white voice. And when he uses his white voice, his career takes off. And it's got Armie Hammer as the CEO of a mysterious sort of Google-like company. It's got Tessa Thompson, the wonderful actress. It's nuts. It gets crazier as it goes on. It's really funny. It's set in Oakland and does right by Oakland. I enjoyed this movie more than anything that I saw at Sundance, and I'm really delighted it's out now. I think it's one of those movies that people are going to discover and talk about, and it's going to be watched for a while because it's nuts in a way that's very pointed and then, crazy in a way that makes sense. Crazy
right.
Like a fox.
All right, so this is the movie Sorry to Bother You. Let's listen to a bit. We've got some of the trailer here. We're going to hear Cassius Green, played by Lakeith Stanfield,
right,
who's given a key piece of advice as he starts his new job. Here it is.
This is telemarketing.
Stick to the script.
Hey, hello. Mr. Davison, Cassius Green here. Sorry to bother.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife, like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regalview.
Use your white voice. Okay.
And that, by the way, the giving him that advice is Danny Glover, who at one point does say, I'm too old for this. You know what?
Yeah. All right. Well, looking forward to later in the summertime. Anything else you want to talk about? What about Zama?
Oh, well, so in summer, you get the big blockbusters, and you also get the off-Sundance stuff that people, were seeing at festivals. And you get a movie like Zama. It's Zama. It's
Zama.
Argentinian. It's by the Argentinian director Lucrecia Martel. This is as rigorous and fascinating and thought-provoking as art house movies get. It's about set in the 18th century in South America about a European functionary, a pencil pusher who's desperate to get back home, but everything conspires against him. It's kind of a Kafkaesque comedy. Reminded me in places of, if you've ever seen the classic Werner Herzog movie, Aguirre, The Wrath of God.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Exactly. And this has some of that dark comedy of colonizers ending up destroying themselves. It's not for everybody, but if you're feeling adventurous, it's beautifully directed. Again, we'll stick with you. Stick to your ribs in a way that some of the other movies of the summer entertainingly don't.
That's great. Okay, well, so that's one that's going to go on my list. Zama, that's from Argentine film director Lucrecia Martel. We've got time for one more. I want to talk to you about Eighth Grade. Tomorrow, we have an interview. Oh, no, next week, I guess, we have an interview with the director, the comedian Bo Burnham, who's a Massachusetts native. So the film Eighth Grade opens with Kayla's vlog or video blog, which you also hear in the trailer. Here's a bit of this.
Hey guys, it's Kayla back with another video. So, the topic of today's video is being yourself. Being yourself can be hard, and it's like, aren't I always being myself? And yeah, for sure. But being yourself is like not changing yourself to impress someone else.
All right, so that's a clip from Eighth Grade, directed by Bo Burnham. This is, of all the movies we've been talking about, this is the only one that I've actually seen.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a really good movie, but it's painful
to
watch.
Yes, it is.
It's painful because of the excruciatingly difficult nature of being this age. We're talking about sort of middle school into high school.
And exactly at the moment when you are trying to redefine yourself, just as your hormones are going nuts, your face is breaking out, your parents are clueless idiots, and here's the new wrinkle. You've got this machine in your hand that allows you to see what everybody else is doing and feel worse about yourself, and that even as you try and redefine yourself.
Right.
This movie is a low-budget labor of love. The lead actress, Elsie Fisher, feels so real. There's nothing Hollywood about her. I forget the actor playing her dad, but as the former parent of teenage girls, I feel his pain.
Yeah.
And you feel her pain. It's a wonderful movie.
You really do. Eighth Grade, directed by Bo Burnham. Film critic for the Boston Globe, Ty Burr, thank you so much for coming in and talking about summer films.
We appreciate Anthony.
It. And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR NPR's Boston's NPR station. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.